Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Deborah Himsel is author of Leadership Soprano Style. And from 1999 to 2005, she worked alongside Andrea Jung at Avon as the Vice President of Global Organization Effectiveness. She's a former senior leader at Deutsche Bank and Pfizer. She is a leadership consultant for many Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, KPMG, ExxonMobil, Bain, Citigroup, and Walmart. She teaches at the Thunderbird School of Global Management and the Helsinki School of Economics. Other things that I think that are interesting is she wrote commentary on the television show The Apprentice for the newspaper USA Today. Deborah, welcome to Edgewise. We're here to talk to you about your new book, Beauty Queen. And the subtitle is Inside the Reign of Avon's Andrea Jung. Just give us a little bit of a background. Not everybody knows who Andrea Jung is. Do you mind just painting a little picture of who she is?
Andrea Jung was the CEO of Avon Products from 1999 until she stepped down as CEO and then chairman of Avon Products in 2012, and had a wonderful career as a marketeer at Neiman Marcus, iMagnons, etc., and really started out with a bang at Avon as CEO and was one of the most admired CEOs, and then ended as one of the most reviled. Fascinating story.
So in the book, you tell the story. You take us on that. And I don't want to go so far as to make it Shakespearean, but it almost is, where you have this rapid growth and success and, you know, a person in the right place at the right time to succeed. But then you have the, you know, the darkness and the tragedy and the...
Yeah, everything
came crashing
down.
Tragedy might be too strong, but
yeah,
kind of everything does come crashing down. The way I took it is the book isn't just a story about her, her rise, her success, you know, like so many stories you might see on the biography channel or something like that. What you've done is you've done this really neat job of weaving in business issues and corporate cultural issues that have to do with organization design, corporate culture, the role of the board, women in leadership. You've netted this quilt that surrounds her. And it isn't just her actions, it's how the company responds to those types of actions, too. What is your goal in sharing a book like this with, let's say, a general business audience? What do you think are the primary takeaways?
Yeah, and thanks for bringing that out, Dave, because what was really important to me when I wrote the book was not only to chronicle the Avon story, but more importantly, to really draw out of that, what are the leadership lessons learned? And what can somebody walk away with from the book that they can implement in their PTA or as CEO or as board member? And so the first part of the book is really the Avon story, and the second part is the extrapolation of the broader leadership lessons learned. And I really wanted to focus on what I thought were the key lessons, such as you mentioned, right leaders, right time, culture, what can we learn about women's leadership? And then I end with just an overall to-do list that, again, anybody can walk away and pick something out of it.
Actually, I have the, ironically or happily, for you, I have the final chapter bookmarked here, and it's called The Leadership To-Do List. Now, there are so many books out there that's what the whole book is. It's the to-do list. Now, you put these recommendations, these 10 recommendations, within the context of Andrea and her work at Avon. Do you find that the challenge really isn't so much saying these things, that the challenge is really pulling what the words and the thoughts are into a leader or into an organization and acting on them? There's the telling, and then there's the doing.
Exactly. And I also do a lot of executive coaching, and it's so easy to write down those typical development plans or say, I'm going to do this, but translating what you want to do into action is where the rubber meets the road. And what I tried to do in the book is to also give some very concrete to do. So if you want to increase your level of self-awareness, what you might want to do is get some feedback from people. If you want to know what the buzz is about you, go and ask people about it. So I also try to provide some very concrete steps that at least can get you started down that pathway. But it's one of those things where you've just got to keep at it, and you just can't let it sit on a shelf and never look back at it.
This is going to sound kind of weird. I'm going to come at this question a little bit from the side, but hopefully you'll appreciate where I'm going with it. I'm not a gigantic history buff, but there are some characters that just stick out for me. And one of my favorite movies of all time is Patton with George C. Scott. And not only because of his, just what a, you know, vibrant and almost two-dimensional cartoonish character he is, but historians look back at someone like Patton and say, this was a wartime general. This is a person who could not have been successful in any other field of endeavor, in any other professional pursuit, unless perhaps he was back in the time of the Spartans, you know what I mean, fighting the Persians. You know, he was a wartime general. He was not built for peacetime. Is there a similar analogy to Andrea and her moment in time at Avon? She was sort of the right person at the right time to make something happen.
Yeah, and in the book Beauty Queen, I really talk about I talk about her tenure really in two halves, from 1999 to 2005 and then on. The first half of her tenure, Avon really needed somebody who was very strategic, who could really mobilize and align people about where the organization could go, what can be, and also to revitalize and contemporize the brand. Her marketing expertise just fit that bill, and also just her leadership style. She mobilized everybody. She had the cohesiveness of the senior team, and everybody was in lockstep. The second half, things got a little dicier. She started losing some talent. Her strong number two, Susan Croft, who was really the operations person, the yin and the yang, retired. And also the business just got more complex. You know, these emerging markets can be gold mines, but they can also be landmines. And the business, I believe, just got too complex for her. She swung the pendulum too far to globalizing everything and lost the nimbleness of the organization to respond to the local needs. And so she was the right person, the right time for the first half, not the second half. And part of the lesson learned is don't overstay your welcome.
Fans of politics have many times a chip on their shoulder about this whole issue involving term limits. And again, how long a person should, you know, stay in control, stay in office. And arguably, you could look at even presidential administrations and say, how many of those second terms just, you know, bad things happened. Yeah. Things came to light. There was abuses of power, or there was miscommunications or errors in judgment. Is it along the same lines of that type of thing, where it's overstaying your welcome, a term limits thing?
Yeah.
Had the needs of the company outgrown her capabilities?
Yes. I'd say a couple of things. First, that just what you said, the needs of the company and the level of complexity had just really outgrown her capabilities. And the second half was really more about supply chain, about getting the products to the representatives in 24 hours.
So it was more of an execution.
More of an execution. And her tilt, her leadership tilt, was more on the strategic, which is one of the things that I think really brought her down, is that she didn't have the complement, somebody who had what she didn't, which was on the execution and upside, and she was far too tilted on the strategic side. The second piece is that, again, on this term limits, and it's probably maybe a little different than politics, a lot of the research has shown that you need to be in a job for about 2 or 3 years to really have an impact. And then somewhere about 7 to 10 years, you probably lose that ability to, A, see things from a different perspective or a fresh perspective, and you also continue after about 7 to 10 years to really just surround yourself with the same people. So you really lose that ability to continue to learn and to really look at things differently than you might have looked at them with fresh eyes first coming in. So I think it was both of those things.
You just, in essence, keep doing the stuff that got you to where you are, you know, past successful
Right.
Behavior.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not consciously. It's just part of the way we're wired. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to get out of the paradigms that we find ourselves into. And sometimes it's just better to just go and do something else, a different role, bring somebody in who can look at it with new eyes.
And what role do you think the board, and again, we're not naming names or holding people accountable, but what role do you think a board, let's just talk in a bigger picture, what role do you think a board, a corporate board, a board of directors plays in assisting in that due diligence and that review and that capability test, let's say, of leadership?
Yeah, and it's a great question because number one, and I talk about this in the book Beauty Queen, that one of the main objectives of the board should also be to make sure there's a ready backup successor as well as other successors in the pipeline. Not just one, but a lot of companies have multiple ones and they have the proverbial horse race. And after a woman by the name of Liz Smith left Avon and she was the potential successor, there was no one else. And the board should have been all over that, should have really forced Andrea, and that the head of HR should have been all over this too, to bring somebody in. So not getting yourself boxed into a corner, but having a ready successor inside, or at least have your antenna out to possible ones on the outside. The second thing is, and we may talk about this later, that in 2008, a whistleblower came forward and said there was potential bribery in China. And then in 2011, the SEC actually started a formal investigation. And it was just settled last week, but internal legal fees were over $340 million. How the board wasn't all over this in either settling sooner or just getting a process in place to make sure that it was settled and to check on the ongoing cash register is really just beyond me. So again, what the role plays in the oversight of some of these emerging markets that are at risk, as well as CEO succession, I think are just two key roles that they should be playing.
Both in the book and in the professional work that you do as a consultant, do you find that most companies do have, as you put it in the book, problems simmering in the background? You know, the ones that eventually mushroom and become catastrophic. It's not lightning striking. It's not an earthquake happening. It's that it was almost viral. The thing kind of grew from within. Mm-hmm. And there were early indications, but either it was backburnered or nobody paid attention to it or nobody hit the alarm button.
Yeah, and one of the things that I guess surprised me a little bit is that it wasn't one thing that really came crashing down, but it was multiple factors: lack of IT infrastructure, the ongoing FCP investigation, a bad acquisition that kind of came converging at the same time. Which again, I would go back to the fundamentals of leadership and the ability for the leader to hear bad news, to surround themselves with people that are going to tell them what's happening and what they need to be aware of. And Andrea, towards the end, 2010, 2011, really didn't have that. And she was surrounded by her loyal cheerleaders who really wanted to protect her. And I think all leaders can take a page from Alan Mulally, the former Ford CEO, mm-hmm. who started his Thursday meeting where he wanted bad news. And he said, we're going to go through each project and I'm going to incent you, reward you to tell me what projects are off track. What do I need to be paying attention to? Where do we need to calibrate? So it's a leadership issue as well. And then you've got to hear that bad news, have that antenna out, and really get those problems before they start crashing around you.
I get that.
And yeah, it's hard.
I'm not a gigantic Bill Gates fan, but one of the quotes from a book of his I read some time ago, Business at the Speed of Thought, that sticks with me. It continues to stick with me. But is this issue of there's no such thing as bad news. Okay? Bad news is no news. If you give me bad news, you give me something I can work with, that we can take action on, that steps can be. If you don't give me anything, then nothing can be done.
Yeah. Very well said.
Culture. It's a rather amorphous thing. And your background in consulting is more on the HR side or no?
Well,
yes?
Well, all the previous roles I held inside organizations were within HR, organization transformation, organization development. So organization culture and the evolution was always a part of
okay.
it.
Okay. culture is a loaded term.
It is.
And I've met an awful lot of authors, and we've conducted an awful lot of interviews, and we've done an awful lot of programs where we keep bumping into the iceberg of culture. And on one hand, it seems some people have the theory of that's something you can own, that's something you control, that's something that you need to develop. That's, you know, it's very much this sort of almost like lump of clay, you turn it into something. And then the others are like, you can't control it directly. You got to kind of impact it by the things that surround it. It's like dark matter.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You got to sort of impact the things that surround it, the people, the processes, the leadership. And when you begin to build those and control those and administrate those and hook those all together the right way, then a culture evolves as a byproduct of that. Where do you come down on culture?
Yeah, on that second piece. And in fact, I don't really like the term culture change, but culture evolution. And that I talk about in the book Beauty Queen, that cultures really evolve, but should always be aligned with where the business is going and the strategy of the business. And that what once worked in your culture, given where your business is going, may not be working today for you. And with Avon, it was a very entrepreneurial culture and never really quite found the right balance of entrepreneurship with discipline, as well as you need to really look at what are those pieces of culture that you want to retain. And towards the last couple of years at Avon, that secret sauce of the culture that really mobilized people around women's empowerment was really lost, because it almost like the GM culture moved really more to a cost versus a quality culture or a focus on women.
My concluding question or my concluding observation, and you can comment on it, is in an orbit, in a pretty tight orbit around this being a women's leadership issue. Is the Andrea Jung story a woman in a leadership position issue, or is it just a leadership issue?
Yeah, it's a leadership issue. And again, the book Beauty Queen is applicable to both male and female leaders. Anyone can learn from it. But in the chapter on gender, I do talk about some of the characteristics that I found both in Avon and then in my general consulting practice that are still confronting women today, and more importantly, like the double bind. You know, sometimes my coaching clients say, gosh, what do? I'm getting one message that I'm too assertive, and then the next message is that I'm too soft. What do I do with this double bind? So the lesson learned here is really for all leaders. And Andrea's fall had nothing to do with her gender. It just had to do with her flaws as a leader.
We've been speaking to Deborah Himsel. She's the author of Beauty Queen, Inside the Reign of Avon's Andrea Jung. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan. Deborah, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.